Welcome to Meeple to Meeple, uniting players around the world. A 30-minute exploration of PJ and Gareth's four-game experiences from across both sides of the Atlantic. Each episode, they share their thoughts and opinions on the world of board games, including their favourite themes, games, hot topics, and much, much more.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 80. We are closing in on episode 100. It's going to be amazing. But as promised today, we're going to continue what I don't want to know. I don't know if it's going to be a trilogy. We talked about what do you do with your board game backlog? We talked about board game. How do you teach board games last week? And this week, we're going to talk about board gamer jargon. How do you talk to non-gamers and new gamers about our beloved hobby? As always, I'm PJ. Unfortunately, life as it is has taken dear Gareth away, but fear not, for I have someone who can fill his shoes all the way from England, and I have John from Triwin Games. John, thank you for agreeing to be with me today.
Hello, PJ. I was trying to consider how I would compare myself to Gareth. Obviously, there is no comparison, but I'm wondering whether that I am the Gareth that you would get if you ordered it from Wish. So I'm kind of the impression of Gareth, but it's not Gareth at all, and you're quite disappointed when I arrive. But yeah, thank you for having me on. It's an absolute wonder.
I appreciate it. I asked you like an hour ago, so I didn't give you much time to prepare. But I was like, thank you so much. You know, the beauty is if you just grow more stubble, because you're bald British man from the south part of England, and you put on some glasses, you could fit in for Gareth. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
To work on that.
Right. So we're going to talk about board game jargon. And how to talk to non-gamers or new gamers about our hobby. I posted on Instagram, and I don't think I gave enough time. I think I should have posted it a day earlier. So for our listeners, that's my fault. Mea culpa. I should have given you more time. I got a few responses. Most of them were silly and not really, you know. Someone actually said, I don't talk to muggles. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, that's funny, but isn't that also part of the problem?
Yeah, it's very revealing in the humor. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So that's just where my head goes. But yeah, so I was thinking about it. So I don't know. I'm still, as much as I've thought about this topic, I don't know. And as often as I speak to non-gamers about this hobby, I don't believe I do a very good job.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was at a restaurant for breakfast a few weeks ago, got my board gamer t-shirt on, and the host is about to seat us, and he's like, oh, you play board games? I'm like, I do. Yeah. And he goes, oh, do you mean Monopoly and Scrabble? Uh-huh. And I'm really embarrassed to admit that it was like deer in headlights. Like many of our fellow gamers, I got offended. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what is it about us that we feel like everyone should clearly know all about our hobby, but they don't? Like, how did we get there? You know? Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you have to say about that?
I suppose it's a really interesting topic, and having had a very short time to mull it over, there were some initial things that sprang to mind, and I guess the first one is the sort of progression of gamingness, I guess. So obviously, in my mind, everybody's a gamer to some extent,
right?
Because even if you sort of ignore Monopoly and Scrabble and a lot of the sort of family classics, if you like, is most people will have played some sort of game of sorts, whether it's cards or whatnot. And it's quite interesting when people mention Monopoly and Scrabble and stuff like that, and the the response you can get from people who are aware of the bigger things that are available and broader experiences. But I guess it's easy to kind of forget the journey that people have had from whatever those first introductory games were that are of a particular type. And then they've experienced the different player counts and themes and styles of game and such. And then to be brought back down to the sort of, comparatively, I don't want to say primitive, but there's that view, right, of people start with something like that and then they move on. And it can be really awkward to try and describe. It's almost like, I don't know, like if you're trying to learn languages and you're saying, oh, yeah, well, I know English and I know a little bit of French and stuff because the alphabet's very similar. And you go, but if you thought about Japanese, and people will look at Japanese and go, it sounds very, very different.
Yep.
The word, very, very different. It's very sort of comparatively alien to look at. And to quickly transition somebody into that world in like a minute or so, it's not something most people are prepared for with any sort of hardcore hobby. It can really catch you off guard. Yeah. I can understand the sort of, moment where people are like, oh, you mean Monopoly and Scrabble? You're like,
and yet we have this happen all the time, right? Because mm-hmm. we interact with, because as much as we like to pat ourselves on the back with, oh, you know, the multi-billion dollars that this industry brings in, the industry's mm-hmm. really small, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest. Essen's the largest gaming convention at 200,000 people.
Uh-huh.
That's nothing. That's a barely a fraction of a fraction of the global population. And then Gen Con, 50 to 80,000 people. It's like, so clearly we're not mainstream. We are still niche, mm-hmm. which came up in our game of Wavelength when we were in England. Uh-huh. Right? We talked about, hey, you know, board gaming is not really as broad as we like to think. And yet we all have the journey that you just talked about, right? You started off with the Candylands and the Sari and, you know, eventually Monopoly and then later on Risk. And then you get away. Right? My story is similar to so many others. You get away for a while. You come back later in life and it's Catan or it's Ticket to Ride or it's, what's the one that Gareth played? Talisman?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you start. And then as soon as you get back into or you get introduced to modern gaming, what I've noticed is like you just dive in, right? Mm-hmm. You start off on the shallow end, Catan, Ticket to Ride, etc. But then you get into like Tan Garden and Iki and Korra. And now I'm just going to rattle off names. And it just gets really deep. And all of a sudden you're in it.
Yep.
And we're talking and we're using jargon. And it's like, really? Then we forget how to talk to. I don't know that I have a solution, but I think it's an interesting conversation to have. I want to bring something up. One of the reasons, honestly, I asked you to come on today is I think you have a unique perspective. I don't know how many of our listeners know this. John is a game designer who's working on his own game. And so you talk about our hobby. Granted, you talk to the industry, but clearly you run into people who are not gamers and they find out that you've made a game and they're like, oh, tell me about your game. And so do you have a strategy in mind when you talk about your game or our hobby as a whole?
So I think the main thing I'll try and convey is the things that I've, so when I've seen my gameplay particularly, is I wanted it to provoke particular like responses in people, joyful responses in people, right? Because to me, board gaming as a thing is just an excuse to have nice times with people. And because there's so many different types of games, you can have lots of different types of nice with folks, and whether that's a bit of social deduction or whatnot. But I think my main thing is just conveying the experiences that the game brings up, and then it sort of leads people into asking other questions, so that then they can come to it honestly not knowing anything about the broader gaming experiences, and they don't feel inept by not already knowing. So I'll say things like, well, it's a competitive game, it's card-based, and then you've got this sort of theme on the top, and there's sort of different mechanics in it. And then some people go, okay, tell me about the mechanics. And you're like, oh, you understand what that meant, cool. Or some people go, so what's a game mechanic? And then you can quickly compare it to something else that they're going to be more familiar with, and then just sort of ease them in, sort of if they're in the lobby of the board game experience world, if you like, and then they can ask more questions and become better informed, and either go, oh yeah, I can see why people would want to do that, or go, okay, I'm still not sure why people would want to do it, but at least I appreciate it a bit more, right?
Right.
Not every hobby experience is for everybody.
True.
But if they can at least understand more about it, they can either go, yeah, I would actually like to maybe give it a whirl, or, you know, I know enough to go, I'll do something else with my time, which is
sure,
perfectly fine too.
Yeah, because the devotion that gamers have to our hobby is very similar. In the U.S., you see this, you read this, you hear about this all the time, is the comparisons to American sports fans, whether that's baseball, whether that's basketball, whether that's American football. And then you have American football, professional football, and then you have college football, right? Kind of the amateur level, but you're representing your school. And the countless thousands of dollars that people spend on the tickets and things. Yeah, we do that with board games. So why is it so hard for us to connect in a meaningful way and be able to share our hobby? Because you can be a sports fan and you can be a gamer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not oil and water, but sometimes it appears that way.
So I guess my thought maybe would be comparing it. So I can see why the sports fan analogy would be brought up, but to me it'd be more something like people who are really into like modifying cars and things like that. So they'll buy a bog standard vehicle and then they'll tune it up and they'll trick it out with various paint jobs and accessories and such. And lots of people have motor vehicles, lots of people have cars, and they will see people with particularly modified cars in a car park just with the bonnet up, lugging underneath, or having to sit inside, or having the radio on, whatever. And there'll be people who've also got vehicles looking at them going, that looks insane. Even though they also drive a car, but their experience with the car is very different to the enthusiast. Right. And the reason I think it's different to the sports world is because a gamer is taking something standard off the shelf like a vehicle, and they've got the opportunity to either make it their own with the experience they provide with it and people they game with, or by accessorizing it or modifying or improving it. And I think there's more of an essence that comes out from people rather than being, I suppose to me, the sports fan comparison would be like people who go and watch people play board games, as in like people watch games played online.
Right.
But it's less of a fan experience and more of a in-it experience and understanding the game and the law, if that's appropriate, or whatever.
That is a fair point. That is a really fair point. The only time I recall watching people play a board game was Will Wheaton's Tabletop on Geek and Sundry, which is no more. But to be fair, it was really good. Like, yes, it's true. I was watching people play a board, because if you think about it, most board gamers were like, we're not going to watch. You know, we're not going to watch people at a table. Why watch people at a table play a board game when I could play one myself, right? But I didn't realize I was watching people play a board game. I was like, oh, this is really good. It was done really well, executed. But you're right about that, the enthusiast, because, I mean, to a degree, sports fans are just spectators, of course. Mm-hmm. But their devotion and their relationship with their team, school, whatever, is just as visceral and real.
Yeah.
And then how do you talk about our hobby without using jargon? That's the thing, because I have some colleagues in my profession who listen to my podcast in the hopes of getting them into games. And I have one colleague who's always reaching out. Oh, did you hear about this game and this game? You know, what do you know about it? And comes to me with that. But at the same time, I don't understand what you're talking. When you and Gareth are talking, I don't quite follow because, you know what I mean? Because we're using all of our jargon and we talk about all of our game mechanics and things as if. Now, you and I know, but because that's a question I think Gareth and I have really been wrestling with. I'm sorry he couldn't make it for this conversation, but how do we attract more non-gamers both to the hobby and then to our podcast, of course, right? I would hope that if you listen to our podcast, it will help lead you to the hobby, right? Like it's, that's my plan, but is that happening? No, I don't know. So one thing I wanted to share, I saw this on Instagram and it really resonated and reinforced the choice of this topic. This is from Mel's Board Game Room, Melanie, who I don't know. I don't know if she listens to the podcast. If anyone does, or if you know her personally, please let her know to check out the podcast because I was really inspired by this post. This was from earlier. It was from 2-3 days ago. So it says, why board games? Board games can be an unexpectedly effective tool in couples therapy for several reasons. They promote communication, collaboration, and problem-solving skills, which are fundamental components of healthy relationships. Here's a deeper look into why board games can be beneficial, etc. You know, and I was like, whoa, I agree with that. I think that's all very true. I think it's very real. Putting aside couples therapy, I think it's very true about humanity as a whole. And yet we fail to communicate our hobby to non-gamers. Where is the disconnect, John?
I wonder if it's... So that maybe I'm just weird, but there's people I talk to, either if I've just met or I've known a long time, and they'll talk to me about something that they do, and I'll usually say, so why do you do that? And if they're completely perplexed by the question, I'll say, you know, what do you enjoy about it? And sometimes they will have no idea whatsoever why it is they do the thing they do. And sometimes it unleashes this real torrent of enthusiastic joy and delight of going, oh, well, because of this and this. And you're like, wow, okay, I get that. Maybe some people aren't, they've not reflected on what it is. So like we were saying before we started the recording was most of the chat about board games comes down to the mechanics of things, which I suppose has got an interest. But coming back to the car thing is you can say, well, you know, how many brake horsepower has it got and how many pounds feet of torque has it got? And you go, well, when you're sitting in it, driving it, you're not going to be thinking, oh, I feel this much better about this car because it's got 276 brakes and I'd feel worse if it was 275.
Right.
there's something more, right, than just the stats of the thing.
Right.
So maybe it comes from just like a curiosity of people going, okay, what is it you enjoy doing that isn't ball games? And you go, oh, so-and-so. And you go, okay, well, if you like that feeling, then this is the game I would invite you to play to get that comparison. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And seek sort of the common ground from their side so that they can, I don't know, look over the fence and go, okay, I recognize some of that.
So the strategy that I use with varying degrees of success, from failure to epic win, is I focus on theme. Because the reality is okay, so I know someone who, you know, I've got a family member who's an auto enthusiast and, you know, he does his, you know, puts his vehicle together. And I'm like, man, he would love Kanban EV by Lacerda, right? But you can't just like throw someone in the deep end of Lacerda, right? But it's like, how am I going to get him there? So that's a failure. I'm probably going to talk about my failures more than my successes because my failures keep coming to mind. So another one is, so Jerusalem, Anno Domini, right? We thought it might be an appropriate game for Catholic education because, you know, I work for the Catholic Church. And it turned out, while the theme is beautiful, I mean, it's perfect, Lord's Supper, you're trying to, you know, everything, it's appropriate. It didn't work because the game mechanics, because it's there's worker placement, and if you don't understand that, and you're not used to that, right? So it didn't quite work, right? It conveyed the theme really well to someone who's both a gamer and a Christian or a Catholic or, you know, whatever. And so it was like, yeah. So the two, it was a beautiful marriage, but if you're not a gamer, sometimes the theme doesn't matter, which means that my strategy is not so good.
Yeah. Now, I'm with you on that. Is there are a lot of games that appeal in terms of theme? Mm-hmm. But even to me, and you look at them and you go, I love the way it looks and the thing that I'd want to get from it, but I know by playing it, it's not going to offer that experience.
Right.
And I guess it's like with choosing books, right? Is you can have a book on a particular subject that you enjoy, either fact or fiction.
Right.
And depending how that's been structured and written, and you're either going to love it to death or you're really just not going to get into it.
And we have such emotional connections with the games that we love or the books that we love.
Yeah.
It's like, do I want to recommend this book to John? And he ends up hating it. Oh, you know? it's really interesting. So the other challenge for the conversation was to describe, how can you describe a game without using board game jargon to a non-gamer, right? Mm-hmm. So like, how would you describe... I don't know. You pick a game on your shelf and try to describe it to me as if I'm a non-gamer without using, because I don't know. I don't want to pick a game and you've never played it, because that would be my luck. I'd be like, well, pick this game. And you're like, I've never played it, PJ. I don't know.
Okay. So I was thinking of one in particular where it's a competitive game and you've got little figures on your side and little figures on my side. We've got a fixed number of them in colours to represent our team. And competitively, we're going to build a map. And that map is going to reveal features. They're either going to be roads, or they're going to be little cities that will enclose, or just open fields. And if you, as you build them, you can put your people on those and score different points as bits are completed. So there's part of the strategy is placing the pieces of the map in ways that are either beneficial for you directly or placed in a way where you can sort of capitalize on sneaking points from somebody else's area that they're trying to build up. And then if I wanted to describe it anymore, then I'd start going straight into the jargon stuff.
And for the record, you were describing Carcassonne, right?
I was, yeah.
So I love that. And that was successful. But the one thing criticism I would have is that I don't know that it conveyed any emotion, right?
Uh-huh.
So, so either you think your description that you just gave was interesting or John, why should I play that? That doesn't, I'm laying roads and cities. What, you know what I mean?
Well, I guess the game I'd introduce or describe to somebody is tapping into what sort of things they enjoy doing first.
Right.
So then you can talk to them in something they're going to enjoy. Because it can be quite easy. And the same with more regular gamers, is they'll look at a particular game, they'll read the spec, they'll hear the reviews and talk to people who've played it and go, why would I want to play that?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, that's fine. It's just clearly not a game for you, and that's all right.
That's
true. I think that's something else for non-gamers, if you like, is to give them a usefully curated introduction so that they warm to the experience of gaming to begin with, rather than have a first experience to go, okay, now I understand why I don't do this, and then never touch it again.
That's fair. No, I love it. That's great. What care? How'd you put that? Oh gosh, I should have wrote it down when you said it. Carefully curated. That's not what you said.
Carefully curated. Yeah.
Carefully curated. Oh, that was beautiful. That was great. Oh my gosh, that's so good. So what is, do you have a favorite board gamer jargon? Is there a term that you just love to use to describe things? And I'll add to that in case this helps you, that you use, not because maybe you don't love it, but because you found it easy to describe and useful when engaging with non-gamers.
That's very interesting. I can't say that I have.
Okay.
Maybe I should have been really more conscious of whether I have fallen into a common phrasing that always comes out to describe bits and pieces, but I can't say that I have.
Okay.
No. Do you?
So the one that goes back and forth is meeple.
Okay.
That's not something people... It's it's easily identifiable, and 90% of the time, the reason why I talk more about what is a meeple to people than I do about, and then that will open up the conversation of board games, because either I'm wearing a meeple to meeple shirt, or I've got another shirt with just the meeple logos. Yeah. I've got meeple logos on it. Like just this morning with my mother-in-law, who's down here for my birthday weekend and Mother's Day. She was like, so what is that? You know, cause I was showing it off and I was like, yeah, so this is a meeple. And I gave her the whole story. It's like, this is why, you know, but it's become general. Like it was originally a wooden component from Carcassonne, which is beautiful that you brought that up. Now you and I are meeples, right? Like it's like, this is the beauty of language, is like, it has evolved into we're meeples. My wife and I have matching t-shirts that have five meeples in five different colors, and it says hanging with my meeps instead of peeps. If you wear that and you go to a non-gaming thing like a restaurant or a grocery store, someone is going to be like, what is a meep and why are you hanging with them? You know? And so then you've got to tell them, well, this is what a meeple is. And, you know, sometimes I go too far. Katie's like, you don't need to tell them the whole story. Just, yeah, because I'm like, well, meeple's a term that we use in the board gaming community. We are meeples. It's the same thing as players or gamers, and you know. And then I start getting into the, there's this game called Carcassonne with these wooden pieces, and she's like, they don't need all that. Just, and I'm like, okay, thank you, honey. I love you. So yeah, but I was thinking about how like, how would I describe Gloomhaven? How would I describe Pandemic? How would I describe... I was really thinking about Fluttering Souls because we played it today. Because we went to the Butterfly House outside of St. Louis on Friday. And we saw it. It was beautiful. I mean, all these butterflies. And several of the butterflies that are featured in Fluttering Souls are in, like... I saw Blue Morphos for the first time and I'm like, this is so cool. It's in this game. And so then, you know, playing that with my mother-in-law, we're like, oh, you know, okay, here we go. And then I got a prototype copy of Backyard Butterflies by Moonraver Games. And so we played that as well because it was that butterfly theme. And it was like, okay, how do I describe it without saying, well, it's set collection and, you know, there's some hand management and you got to score points. Because what does that mean, right? Like, I have a whole laundry list of things to avoid when you're having initial conversation, right, with a non-gamer. These, you can eventually incorporate them in conversation, but when you start talking about worker placement, they don't understand what that means. Yeah. Right? Because when you think of a worker, you're thinking of like a guy on the side of the road who's working a construction site. Wait, worker placement? What is that, right? Tile laying. So I'm laying tiles? What's going on there, right? Resource management. What kind of resources, right? engine building throws everybody off. Mm-hmm. Describe a game as engine building to a non-gamer and their eyes just glaze over. Right? Right? Rondel. Yes, yes, we know what a rondel is, but the word rondel is not commonly used. It's not a word we use in common vernacular, right? Even though it may in fact be a rondel, and when they see it, they're like, aha. Real time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Trying to picture a board game that's real time. Now, us gamers, we know what that is, but that's really weird. And then asymmetric. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, we know what the word means, but what does that mean in terms of the board game?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, like it's this asymmetrical abilities and you're playing the game around this rondel and you're going to have hand management and you're trying to, you know, do some set collection. Whoa, calm down. You just lost your non-gamer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you got to build that. You got to build that trust with that person and describe the game. However, though, these are really great ways of describing a game as well once you get them hooked. But don't overwhelm them with jargon, which I think this is true of anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's certainly true in my profession, right? We have tons. There's so much jargon in the archival world. Oh my God. You know, in fact, archives, when people ask me what I do and I'm like, I'm an archivist. You're a what? Mm-hmm. What's that? I mean, for my friends who listen on a regular basis, you guys know me, so you know what that is, but people are like, what? Right. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do so my profession. My way of life, if I can't communicate that, which I can, but why is it when someone says, oh, you mean my Monopoly, I just shut down. And I see a lot of my gamer friends do it too. And it's like, oh man, we can do better. I can do better. I can do better. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's nice to at least have the reflection, right, of the experiences of people saying things about board games and just reflecting on it and going, how could I do that a bit better in the future? Because I remember my first experience of seeing a board game cafe inside and just the Willy Wonka experience of going, wow, this is such a cornucopia of stuff and colour and boxes and sizes and people playing things and different things in front of them. And I still get that same experience where you get a game that you've not played before that perhaps you're not familiar with, and you put it all in front of you going, I have no idea what any of this does, but I know in probably half an hour, I'm going to understand how all of this fits together, and it's going to allow me to have an experience that I've not had before.
Right.
And then I can repeat with others and bring them into it as well. And I think there are very few comparative hobbies, I guess, that are so quick to be able to get other people into the thing. Because like if somebody starts playing the game, it's not like you cracked open a beer and you're like, if you take a sip of that one, they're like, don't like that one. You're like, okay, we'll put that to the side and we'll try and you can just put the box away and just get another box out. It's right. You're not wasting the beers. So there's always the option to switch it out.
Imagine how great the world would be if you could look at a table, just everything you describe. Okay, well, I don't understand what's going on, but in 30 minutes, I'm going to understand how all this works.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is no way that I could train somebody to do my job in 30 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Or yours or anyone else's. I mean, shoot, just basic retail and food service. You've got 3 to 5 days of training. I mean, mm-hmm. So it is kind of interesting. Our hobby is so, and there's so many benefits. There's so many social, mm-hmm. so many social, emotional, intellectual benefits to our hobby. I'm surprised that here we are almost 25 years into the 21st century and it's not more mainstream, especially mm-hmm. given the titles. One of the things Gareth and I were talking about in the board game backlog episode, we didn't dive into it very much, but a little bit, is, are there just too many games? Right?
Okay.
So there is a plethora of games out there. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't even know if plethora is the right word, right? I think we've exceeded plethora and we moved on to to giga ethera. I don't know. Now I'm making things up. But yeah, there's so many titles, and it's like, there's so many titles and it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Why isn't it more prolific? Why isn't it more ubiquitous?
Yeah.
I just think these are really interesting questions to ask. I don't necessarily.
Some very good points. Yeah,
I don't necessarily expect everyone to think about it, but I think it's, you know, it's worth having the conversation. It's kind of cool. And maybe my suggestion coming out of this conversation, maybe by thinking about how to talk to non-gamers about it, and if we just tweak the way we do, we could get more gamers into the hobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what I hope anyway.
I agree with that.
Or just don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about, and just kind of follow Triwin all the way home. He knows what he's talking about. do you have a jargon you try to avoid? I tried to ask you about one you like, you lean on. Is there one that you like just absolutely try to avoid it?
So I don't think there's a jargon I avoid, but there is stems from jargon. So people will describe in various ways, like analysis paralysis or taking too long on a turn.
Sure.
And as soon as somebody mentions that in a game, whenever I play with them ever again, I think there's a pace, right, that I need to keep up with, and I end up making often rushed decisions because I want to keep it flowing, right? And I'll get the experience of the game, and eventually I'll be like, oh, if I'd have sound, and that's fine, right? So I never mention that with people because I genuinely, if they spent an hour just debating something, it's a moment, right? It's something from that game that has emerged as something that was memorable, and it's not the worst thing in the world. But that's something I avoid wherever I can.
That's good.
I think it just makes people feel unnecessarily uncomfortable.
Sure.
And I don't want people to feel like that gaming.
So that's great. It's great that you brought that up. I have noticed that when you're introducing someone to a game, if you talk about that at all, or if before the game, just in general, you kind of complain, maybe not complain, but you give some negative connotation to analysis paralysis. I'm going to go into this game as a newbie, as a new non-gamer. I'm going to go into this game going, I hope I don't take too long on my turns.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting how, and this is what I love about humanity. You and I talked about this a little bit when I was in England. We talked about this one late night at the bar. The beauty of humanity is the way we can influence and impact other people's experiences, whether intentionally or unintentionally, right? Yeah. And so simply by talking about, because even in a group of gamers, if somebody goes on and on about how they hate analysis paralysis, or worse, AP, right? Don't use that around a non-gamer, but okay. And then I'm nervous, like, dude, am I taking too long?
Mm-hmm.
I suffer... Katie complains that I suffer the opposite. I burn through my turns, right?
Okay.
Yep. We were playing Backyard Butterflies this morning, and we're also doing laundry. And so it was time to turn the laundry from the washer to the dryer. And I was like, okay, well, would you go do that while I take my turn real quick? And she's like, yeah, but by the time I get to the washer, you'll be done with your turn. And she's not wrong. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother, I think we can have an entire conversation about analysis paralysis and why people suffer and how to avoid it and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But I did promise, our dear friend Craig from Get Into Games, he responded to my request for jargon. I have to find it now. I told him that I would use it in the episode, and he's like, cool. So, because his was funny. Okay. This was Craig's response to my question of how do you talk to non-gamers about our hobby, right? And this is what he wrote. Me. Hello, I play board games. Them. Like Monopoly? Me. Yes, like Monopoly. But there are so many different types of games now, more than your traditional games. Or, I love this. Me. Hello, I play board games. Them. Oh, like Cards Against Humanity? Me. That's not a game. Exits the room. Now, for those of you who love Cards Against Humanity, I apologize. Those are not my words. They are Craig's. But it's... I love it. That's great. I was at a store today. It's kind of like this. It was, I don't really know how to describe it. It's camping, it's hunting, it's fishing, but it's also, there's a clothing and it's kind of a department store. It's this big store that has a Ferris wheel inside.
Wow.
Yeah. So they have like a little board game shelf, right? And they've got Monopoly and Monopoly Junior, and they've got Candyland, and they've got, but then they also have Catan and Catan Junior and Ticket to Ride. So we're starting to see those gateway gamer games that more advanced gamers tend to shy away from because they feel like they've moved past it. But those games that got us into the hobby, we're starting to see them on the shelves now. So I feel like when you see them in the Walmarts and the Targets and all of the equivalents around the world, they're on the shelf. That's a really good sign. It's like, hey, okay, Ticket to Ride and Catan. Yeah, I understand. You know, I still love Ticket to Ride, but Catan is not a game that I play either because it's just, you know, not that I'm above it. It's just like, you know. It's not as engaging anymore because I'm looking for more in the from the game experience. But I would play Catan if some family members or some friends who'd never played before were like, hey, you're like my mother and father-in-law were like, I'd like to try Settlers of Catan today. Yes, we're hitting Settlers of Catan to the table. I will do that. So I'm glad to see it on the shelves at more general stores, not special. Likewise. Do I want to see more? Yes, of course, you know. But yeah, so you've certainly given me a lot to think about. I hope that we have given all of you lots to think about. I'm going to try to do a better job when someone's like, oh, you mean like Monopoly or Sorry? Do a better job of that one.
That's so good.
Next week should be interesting. Geekway to the West is next weekend. I will be there for one day, maybe a day and a half. I'm not gonna be there for the whole thing. But there are a lot of folks who are like, are you gonna be there? And I'm like, well, okay, I'll show up and hang out with y'all for a little while. And, but I'm going to bring my microphone and try to, you know, be the meeple on the ground. John knows all about that. So Gareth and I will hopefully be back next week with some sort of a little Geekway introduction. UK Games Expo is coming up really soon. So there's going to be a UK Games Expo episode coming up. I've got some prototype games, so we're going to be having some more designers on. The summertime is going to be busy. And we are doing... So Meeple to Meeple is approaching its 100th episode, which should be... sometimes at the end of the year, because this is episode 80. The summertime gets busy, so we tend to skip some episodes, but probably, you know, we're hoping to do it by the end of the year to, you know, we'll have some new features coming out for all of our listeners and friends. We're also approaching 1,000 followers on our Instagram account. Could be doing better if I did more. Again, I need to do better. That's the lesson. PJ needs to do better because Gareth's a busy man. I'm the one who has all the free time. I could do this, and I should. But yeah, so we've got some big things on the works. So keep following. Tell all of your friends. Tell your non-gaming friends to give us a listen, and maybe they'll get into the. Maybe they'll come to you and be like, "Hey, I was listening to Meeple to Meeple, and they were talking about tile placement. Can you tell me more about that?" And that's the service we provide. So, John,
I saw the glint in your smile then when you saw the thumbs up.
You saw that, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. John, thank you so much. As always, I treasure your friendship, and thank you for coming on at the last minute and filling in. Gareth will be back with us, and thanks again.
You're very welcome. Thank you, PJ.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please subscribe, and as always, we love to hear your thoughts and ideas, so make sure to leave those in the comments. And don't forget, you can also chat with us both on Instagram, @MeepleToMeeple.